which is Peters versus City of Moncton. Mr. Olson.
May it please the court. Mr. Peters injured his shoulder as a streets worker for the city of Moncton. When he asked to come back to work, the city looked at his medical restrictions, talked to him about whether he could do his job, and then terminated his employment. He got his job back through arbitration of a union grievance. He seeks back pay in this suit under the Rehabilitation Act. The district court granted summary judgment to the city on an argument that it had not made. The argument was that heavy lifting was an essential function of Mr. Peters' job, and that the accommodation he appeared to require to perform this function, help in this lifting, would eliminate the function and thus was unreasonable per se. The district court erred when it reached out to decide this issue in this manner. Basically, neither the district court nor the employer listened to Mr. Peters' description of his duties in his interview with the city or in his deposition. Mr. Peters made it pretty clear that there isn't much heavy work in the operator job, that what there is done by machine, that workers routinely help each other in heavy tasks anyway, whether they're disabled or not, and that there are big, strong workers and little workers, and no one lifts more than his individual capability, disabled or not.
Wasn't Mr. Peters obliged to present evidence demonstrating that the limitation on his ability to work, as the city perceived it, was a limitation severe enough that it would preclude him from a demonstrable number of jobs?
I think that in this case, he wasn't required to present vocational expert testimony on that because the limitations as perceived by the city clearly precluded him from heavy labor, and the old Ben Cole case says that's enough without expert testimony because that's a class of jobs. And that's the old Ben Cole case is relying on the EEOC interpretive guidance in coming to that conclusion. If you're foreclosed from heavy labor, you're foreclosed from a class of jobs, and then you're limited in the major life activity of working. And while we're there, I want to say that we are going to withdraw the argument that Mr. Peters was substantially limited in the major life activity of lifting. We don't think that there's any principal distinction between the major life activity of lifting and that of performing manual tasks that the Supreme Court dealt with in the Toyota Motor case. And I think the Toyota Motor case sets the standard at being unable to perform tasks central to most people's daily lives. We don't think we can show that that was the case with the city's perception of Mr. Peters with respect to the major activity of lifting, but we do think that Cockrum versus Old Ben Coal Company controls on the issue of whether Mr. Peters was regarded as substantially limited in the major life activity of working.
So you're making a distinction here of lifting as a separate, disability as opposed to working.
Separate major life activity.
Major life activity, yes.
Yes. I'd like to say a word about one of the reasons that we're just coming today to withdraw our argument on the major life activity of lifting, and that's this court's decision about 12 days ago actually, in Mays versus Principe. In some dicta on an issue that had not been brought up by the parties, Mays versus Principe said that a person who said that the ability to lift anything over 10 pounds was not a major life activity. we don't think that Mays has any bearing on this case when we take the major life activity of lifting out of the mix, because Mays didn't consider the major life activity of working at all. It didn't consider Cochran versus Old Ben Cole and whether you can be disabled in the major life activity of working because you are limited to anything, to something other than heavy work. And it was it doesn't reach the issues in this case, and it's dicta in any event because it was regarded as non-dispositive by the court in the opinion itself. The last issue I think that the court has to consider was letting Mr. Peters go back to work and try his job a reasonable accommodation. And
reasonable accommodation for his, for what?
For his perceived disability in the major life activity of working, to wit, he had some lifting limitations, and his limitations are set forth in the supplemental appendix to our reply brief, and they're also very aptly summarized in the defendant's brief at page 10. But he was limited to the medium demand category of work. He could never lift over 50 pounds, only occasionally lift 21 to 50 pounds or shovel, and he was allowed to frequently lift 11 to 20 pounds.
Is this Dr. Heft's report?
Yeah, Dr. Heft's report after he was asked for the functional capacities report and did turn it in.
Well, if they're reacting to Dr. Heft's report, which apparently the counsel and others who made the decision to terminate him were, is that declaring him disabled, or is that what you use as a perception that he was disabled?
Yeah, we say Dr. Heft's report puts him pretty much where Mr. Cochran was in the Old Ben Cole case, unable to do heavy jobs and therefore foreclosed from the class of jobs. And that means that he's substantially limited in the major life activity of working under that perception. And where the city went wrong was they didn't engage with him on the issue of whether, even given those limitations, he could still do that operator's job. And there's plenty of evidence in the record that he could.
Well, in hindsight, at least.
Well, there was an opportunity for this interactive process to take place.
Well, the thing is, I'm sort of perplexed about all of this, because it seems that if he claims, I guess, that he's not disabled, his doctor says he has these limitations.
As a matter of medical fact, he wasn't disabled because his limitations turned out not to be permanent. Whether they were accurately described at the time doesn't really matter, because the fact that they turned out not to be permanent torpedoes any actual disability claim we've relied throughout on our regarded as claim. The city says we accepted the Heft description as permanent. We say we accept that is true. And then the analysis moves on to does that Heft report, if regarded as permanent, make him regarded as disabled? We think Cochran answers that question. Then it goes on to, did the city fulfill its duty to interact with him on the accommodation question? And we don't think it did, because they never really asked him when they asked him, can you do these duties?
He said somebody can help me.
Well,
or a hoist can be used.
On one occasion he said, if I had trouble lifting, I might need some help or a machine, but as it turns out, that's no more than the non-disabled workers got. So that wasn't the kind of special accommodation that Judge Crabb made it out to.
If the workers are helping each other out, that doesn't change the job description, does it?
No, but the court has to look at what the job actually was, not just at the written job description.
Or instead of looking at the perception they had of the employee, why don't you look at what the city's perception of the job was, which is you have to lift.
The city has
an option. He said he couldn't lift, or if he couldn't lift, somebody else could help, or they could give him a forklift. In other words, he quarreled with the job description as opposed to his ability to do it.
Well, we do quarrel with the job
description. Yeah, but the job description was drafted by the city, and that's the one they expect people to live up to.
If there was case law that said that the job description as drafted by the city is unattackable by a plaintiff, I wouldn't be here. But the case law says the court has to look at not
just... Well, they can't draw a job description that nobody can meet, but they can draw a job description that they reasonably expect people to live up to. That is to be able to do the job. And lifting is one of them. And to be able to say, yes, I can lift, but if I can't, somebody can help me, is not saying you can do the job.
If the city drafts a job description that says you have to do a lot of heavy lifting, and the fact is that on the job you don't, I think the court and the city have to look at that real evidence.
I don't think there's any dispute that you have to do heavy lifting. It's a question of whether you have to have help to do it. But that's what he said. Anyway.
I'd like to reserve the rest of my time, if I may.
Sure. Ms. Lubinsky?
May it please the court, counsel. We are here today on an appeal of a grant of summary judgment to the defendant, City of Mauston, entered by Chief Judge Barbara B. Crabb.
I thought we had followed that up in the last thing. Why don't you pop down and tell us what you're going
to
talk about?
The one thing I want to note before moving to the issue of whether the City of Mauston perceived the plaintiff as substantially limited in the major life activity of working, recognizing that the plaintiff has now conceded that they are withdrawing their argument that there was a perception that Mr. Peters was substantially limited in the major life activity of lifting. I would like to note that the recent Supreme Court case in Toyota Motor Manufacturing, the Supreme Court did indicate, and I quote, "It is insufficient for individuals to merely submit evidence of a medical diagnosis of an impairment." The court in that case stated that the individual must show how the limitation caused by the impairment was substantial in terms of the employee's own experience. In short, what the court said is that you, in determining whether somebody has an actual disability, a perceived disability, or a record of a disability, you can't merely look to a medical diagnosis. What you have to do is look at how it affects the plaintiff. And that's what, in this case, the plaintiff's relying on. The plaintiff's relying on Dr. Heff's medical diagnosis.
But why doesn't the functional capacity evaluation that Dr. Heff prepared and on which the city relied in terminating Mr. Peters support the inference?
It does.
That the city regarded Mr. Peters as being able to perform any job involving hard labor, because doesn't Dr. Hoff's evaluation indicate that he was restricted to, at most, medium labor jobs?
It does, Your Honor. It does indicate that he cannot lift more than 50 pounds. He has certain variable lifting restrictions under 50 pounds. However, and I noticed the plaintiff relies heavily on the Cockrum, or the Ben Cockrum, I believe he referred to it, case in which...
Old Ben.
Thank you. I apologize. In which the plaintiff had restrictions including no heavy labor. But I would point the court to a Seventh Circuit decision that was subsequent to the Old Ben case, and that is the Contreras case. In Contreras, the plaintiff had an absolute prohibited 45-pound lifting restriction. He couldn't lift any more than 45 pounds. And the court in that case said, and I quote, "We fail to see how this inability constitutes a significant restriction on one's capacity to work, as that term is understood under the ADA. Contreras has not presented evidence that even hints at the notion that he is precluded from a broad class of jobs." I think that case needs to be viewed in conjunction with the EEOC v. Rockwell case, which is, in the city's view, the lead case that the court should look at. In EEOC v. Rockwell, which is a 2001 case, the Seventh Circuit said you need to present evidence of the number and types of jobs in the relevant geographic market, unless it's the rare case. And those are the words the Seventh Circuit used, the rare case. Plaintiff is relying on a 1996 case decided 5 years before Rockwell, which the court in Rockwell said this may be one of the rare cases. So plaintiff is trying to fit his limitations into those rare cases. And I would submit in answer to your question that the limitations or the restrictions in the Old Ben case are not nearly similar to what we have in this case. In the Old Ben case, the plaintiff was restricted from lifting any amount of overhead lifting. He was also restricted from no heavy lifting, which indeed in this case there is a 50-pound lifting restriction. He was also prohibited or restricted from pushing or pulling out from his body in any amount. And the court in that case said, given the breadth of those restrictions, that might apply to a broad class of jobs and therefore we'll let it go to a jury. In this case, what we have is we have a 50-pound lifting restriction. Again, the Seventh Circuit has already ruled that a 45-pound lifting restriction is not sufficient. If indeed a 50-pound lifting restriction in which somebody can only, they're restricted to a medium demand category, that's the same thing at issue in Contreras. If that were the case, if it were the case that somebody who has a 50-pound lifting restriction, who is limited to medium demand jobs, is de facto disabled, then Contreras would have come out the other way. It didn't. We would submit to the court that the inability to lift over 50 pounds or being classified in a medium demand category is not the rare case in which the plaintiff is excused from presenting that vocational data. In this case, the plaintiff clearly didn't have that evidence, so they have to rely on those rare cases. And this is simply not one of them. It's not analogous to the Cockrum decision. It's certainly more analogous to the Contreras decision. And again, under EEOC v. Rockwell, his failure to produce relevant geographic market data requires that there be a dismissal on that issue. I think it's important to step back and to remember that this is not an actual disability case. It's not a record of disability case. It's a perceived as disability case. So the plaintiff's got to present evidence that the city of Mauston perceived him to be unable to work.
Yeah, that's what the district court assumed.
That's correct.
Why, are you accepting that assumption in your argument?
No, I am not. In fact, I'm challenging that assumption, Judge. That assumption was not based on any fact in the record. Plaintiff in his brief, in their argument, did not cite to any fact in the record that supports their assumption. I think the only fact that might have been mentioned in plaintiff's initial brief was a hearsay statement. A foreman told Mr. Peters that unidentified management officials said, if you go for surgery, you might lose your job. That's the only factual reference I've seen in all of the pleadings to date. And of course, that's hearsay. It's certainly not sufficient to support the district court's assumption. I think the district court made the assumption because the district court recognized, and this is on the second issue in this case, that there was no reasonable accommodation. The job restrictions, the job duty rather, duties required heavy lifting. He clearly, based on the restrictions of his doctor, which we concede were probably wrong at the time, but we believed them to be true. We relied on his doctor to say what those restrictions were. He couldn't do the job. As the district court in its well-reasoned opinion noted, the Seventh Circuit cases are clear that an employer need not reasonably accommodate an employee by providing somebody to help them out lifting. And that's exactly the type of accommodation that the plaintiff is requesting in this case. The plaintiff does request a kind of wait and see, try and see, let me try to see if I can do my job. And with all due respect, we do not think that that's a reasonable accommodation. Given the restrictions, comparing those restrictions on the two meetings that the city officials met with Mr. Peters to go over his job, to go over the restrictions, to determine whether he could perform the job, and if not, if a reasonable accommodation were warranted, would allow him to perform the job. Allowing him to just kind of try the job and see would put the city in a position that I think a lot of employers are put in, and that is that they see restrictions and they believe based on their discussions that with the employee, that the employee can't perform the job, that there's no reasonable accommodation. They don't want the employee to injure him or herself. They don't want to create a safety risk.
This is the sort of a three-phase process. You have the city's perception, I guess, based on Heft's report, that he has these limitations, and they get together, city council, I guess everybody got involved, and decided that these limitations could be a risk to him and perhaps others on the job. So they terminate him because there's no other job.
Correct.
Put him in. Now, he says he wasn't disabled and should have been able to go back to work as a reasonable accommodation, just to show that. And then the judge says, because of the reliance on Dr. Heft, that she's going to label that as a perception of disability, and then go on to say that the reasonable accommodation that he wanted was not reasonable or something like that. It seems like we have a triangle here.
I do not disagree with the court. We do. We have certain prerequisites to moving on to the next step. And I would remind the court that the plaintiff has not alleged in this case that he was actually disabled. He has not. He's waived.
Let me see if I can recapitulate what you're saying. He was not disabled. He did not consider himself disabled. The city didn't consider him disabled. They simply considered that he couldn't do that job, but he was not disabled in the terms of the Disability Act. Am I correct?
That is exactly correct.
That lays it out anyway.
I will point out one more argument, and this kind of raises a question that I think the panel had earlier, and that is, this is a perceived as case. And there are, as we've pointed out in our brief, I believe three other circuits that have held quite clearly that in perceived as cases, a plaintiff's not entitled to a reasonable accommodation. And the reason being that if they're not disabled, why should the employer have to accommodate them? So I would point the court out to those cases in the brief. I will not go over it in any more detail. In short, we would ask that the judgment of the district court be affirmed. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Mr. Olson.
Let me try to answer a few concerns quickly, beginning with the concern about whether the employer's job description is conclusive on a description of the duties. We covered this at page 31 of our brief. It's Bassus versus Cook County, this court's 2001 decision, and it says that the court and the employer have to look at more than the written job description, including work experience of incumbents on the job. As to Mr. Peter's request that he be allowed to try his job, we agree that that's unreasonable if there's real evidence of danger here or of an intent to violate medical restrictions, but there wasn't. He was just saying, I don't think that anything I have to do on this job goes beyond my restrictions, as Dr. Heft wrote him, the way the job really is, maybe not the way it's written down on your job description. And it looks to me like that's exactly what the very reasonable employer, the Veterans Administration, did. In this court's opinion in Stein versus Ashcroft, which was decided last March just after we filed our principal brief in this case. It's suggested that we needed an expert witness to show that Mr. Peters was foreclosed from a class of jobs. The case that's relied on is the Rockwell case. There you had a group of employees who weren't disabled but had a potential to develop a future injury. I can see where you need an expert witness to show that people who are not currently disabled but have a potential to develop a future disability are foreclosed from a class of jobs. But when somebody's got the lifting limitations and other physical limitations that Mr. Peters had, the Cochran case controls, and there was no expert witness anywhere in sight. We think Cochran survived Contreras because of those other physical limitations that Mr. Cochran and Mr. Peter had beyond lifting. Mr. Contreras apparently could have lifted 40 pounds 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, and that is not being foreclosed from heavy labor, if you ask me. Mr. Cochran and Mr. Peters both had additional limitations of non-lifting nature, and Mr. Peters' lifting limitations went down in the frequency steps down into much lower percentages and poundages. So we think that Mr. Peters, for a number of reasons that we've summarized in the brief, was perceived as every bit as foreclosed from heavy labor jobs as was Mr. Cockrum and old Ben Cole. And there's no principal distinction there. The issue isn't, was there some difference in the disabilities and impairments that they had? The issue is, were they both foreclosed from the class of heavy labor jobs? If they were, they were both perceived as disabled. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. The case will be taken under advisement.